racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
It's time for In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bupka, proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., much better known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And he is the general manager of the Normandy Golf Club, which, by the way, folks, the oldest public golf club west of the Mississippi, located in Great St. Louis. Jay, the move to March by the Players' Championship, out of the box, a good thing?
I think so. I think that it is a good move. I was a little disappointed in the fact that there wasn't much rough and the golf course didn't play a little more difficult, but you know that's what happened. I mean, it is what it is, and I think it is a good move to March. And as we've talked about, it sets up this March, April, May, you know, June, July, and then August being the FedEx Cup playoffs. So I liked it. And it was a great tournament when you think about it. All those guys, all those names, Bob, so many different players moving upward and downward and on the leaderboard. It certainly added a lot of excitement.
You know, watching it over the weekend, I was excited about the prospect of doing this show with you, because I wanted your input. What I'm witnessing is, you know, the game plan apparently for the Masters several years back, they made almost a conscious decision. I'm sure it was a conscious decision to soften things up on Sunday, saying that patrons there want to see birdies. People watching on TV want to see birdies. I mean, here's this great Pete Dye golf course. It's the Players' Championship. The 16th hole's a par 5, and I'm watching guys hit 8 or 9 irons for their second shot. It just seems like the courses that these majors are being contested on are just being made way too easy.
Bob, when you look at the 18th hole at the TPC Sawgrass, and anybody that has played it knows how narrow that fairway is. And back in the day, you'd see guys hitting driver 4-iron, driver 5-iron. As you said, that's done. The difficulty of that hole is not what it used to be, or at least it wasn't this year. And I understand why the Masters did it, and you're dead on right. It was a conscious effort. They wanted to restore the roars. And that's okay. I mean, that's what the Masters Sunday is. It doesn't start until the back nine and all that hoopla. But I think the Players' Championship, and as you said, at this iconic venue, TPC Sawgrass, which we know they spend whatever they need to have it as pristine as they can be, find a way to toughen it up just a little bit. I'm not saying make these guys look like they don't know what they're doing, like an old-school U.S. Open, but I mean, you know, a couple under par each day wins the tournament. 12 under par. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point, and it's certainly going to be debated a lot. You know, I take a look at that 12th hole, par 4, that basically played as a par 3. I mean, they're driving it on the green. There's really no downside for going to that green. But I'm sure that they'll put everything back on the drawing board and see how they can make it better. Certainly the names near the top of that leaderboard justify the magnitude of the championship. Hats off to Dustin Johnson. He takes over again, as you well know, Jay, as the number one player in the world, from Brooks Koepka, who's number 2. Justin Rose is number 3. I mean, those three guys, I mean, I think they're separated by a notch or two.
A unique time. And as we mentioned those three names, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and Justin Rose, and we haven't even started talking about the guy that you've been talking about for a while thinking it was going to be a grand year for him. Other people have been questioning his final rounds when he's had the leader, been there. I've been just amazed by his consistency. And that's Rory McIlroy, who's not even in that top three, but probably will be the favorite headed to Augusta. And the last thing, Bob, on the TPC Sawgrass as it relates to the golf course, think about this. How many great golf courses, or maybe this is just a back-of-the-day statement, had four par fives that were all reachable? And that essentially means for these guys, if they're playing well and they can get on par fives and two, that they start three or four under par, I mean, in theory. So that's one of the things not to forget about TPC Sawgrass, that all the par fives are reachable in two.
You're right. We haven't mentioned the name Rory, but happy to report to you, partner. Last Wednesday on Talk Sport, based out of London, they asked me point blank, all right, Bubka, who's going to win the Players' Championship? And I said, Rory McIlroy. Boy, I look good on Sunday night, but most weeks I don't look nearly that good. But speaking of me looking good, how good did Rory McIlroy look? You know, he is the most talented guy playing the game right now. And when the field is really stacked, he still seems to have that it factor that nobody else possesses, Jay.
What he did on Sunday, Bob, was separate himself once again from the rest, from the Dustin Johnsons, from the Brooks Koepkas, from the Justin Roses, from the Jason Days, from the Jordan Spieths. It was another step towards being the best player in the post-Tiger era that we knew. And there have been a lot of people, including my man over the pond, Darren, who listens to us, who was talking about Rory and his problems getting it done. I kept pointing out, my goodness, look at what he's done in the calendar year 2019. He hasn't had a finish worse than tied for sixth. He's consistently played well. That means good things are going to happen, and I don't think he's the kind of guy that gets affected by maybe not having the best of final rounds. He also shot 267s as part of that final round scenario where people were talking about and got beat. So I thought it was brilliant. I tweeted out on Sunday morning. It just kind of felt like you and I were, in a sense, the only people rooting for this guy. Why not Rory? Why not step back into the limelight? Why not kind of take over as we start moving towards Augusta and all these world-class players getting ready to collide?
You know, Jay, if you want to put his game under the microscope, let's just go back to the 72nd hole, that par 4 that you alluded to. Water down the entire left side, trees to the right. I mean, it's cold, it's windy, it's late in the day on Sunday. He has a one-shot lead. The TV announcers, Paul Azinger especially, says, I don't think there's any need for Rory McIlroy to hit driver here. He should be hitting three wood. Rory McIlroy yanked that head cover off that big stick and just pured it right down the middle. If anybody doubted the ability of Rory McIlroy, they got a little microcosm of his talent right there on that 72nd hole, just the way he played it. It was incredible.
It sure was, and let's hear from Rory after the victory.
I'm so pleased that this good run of golf has culminated in getting a win early in the season, but it's not just a win early in the season. It's a massive win. It's a win that, you know, it's a tournament that I've never won before on a golf course that I've had mixed results on. So, you know, I feel like I'm going to take even more from that. And I had to grind it out down the stretch as well, which I'll take a lot from. I'm just really proud of myself, the way I played the last few holes. Kept telling myself on the way to the 17th tee, just make three more good swings. That's all you need to do. Make a good swing in here, two good swings at the last, and this thing's yours. And to step up and make those three good swings, you know, it's very satisfying knowing that it's in there when it needs to be. In terms of just the run of golf, I think this is the best start to a year I've probably made, and I think I'm on a really good path, and I just want to keep going. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm confident in the path that I'm on. So I'm as confident as I ever have been.
And here's the numbers that tell the tale, Jay. 15 wins, 4 majors, under the age of 30. Only 2 players in history can make that statement, and they're named Tiger and Jack.
I mean, that's as strong as it gets. As my old friend used to tell me, that's stronger than grandmother's breath. I mean, look at that, my man. I mean, only 2 other guys have done that, and the 2 greatest players of all time, I believe. You know, this was big for Rory, and he mentioned it. And how about him saying, I'm as confident as I've ever been. I mean, this is a guy that's dominated some major championships. I mentioned he wasn't in the top 3 in the world rankings. He does move Bob to 4th in the world rankings. And now he's won 3 events on Pete Dye golf courses. Of course, he won the PGA Championship at Kiawah Island, the BMW at Crooked Stick in Indiana, and now the Players at TPC Sawgrass. Huge win. And, you know, now he's won 3 of the majors. He's won the Players Championship. He's won the Tour Championship, and he's won the FedEx Cup. We all know what he's missing.
1 green jacket from immortality. He did pick up $2,250,000, but he wasn't the only great story last weekend. We must talk about the performance of Jim Furyk. What a performance he put on. Simply electrifying for 48-year-old Jim Furyk.
The man is a grinder. He grinds it out. He finds a way to get the golf ball in that hole with that swing. He always has had a knack around greens. He earned enough FedEx. You know, he wasn't even sure he was going to get in this year's Players' Championship, but he earned enough FedEx Cup points with the tie for 9th to squeak into the Players' field, 48 years old. Of course, with my man Fluff, who still owes me a couple of cartons of cigarettes at 71 on the bag with Furyk. Great stuff, Bob. And you know, with the story of him making it his home the last 20 or so years. And here's the other thing about Jim Furyk. I mean, if he keeps those juices going, he'll play the Champions Tour. He's that kind of guy. He thrives on playing. So, you know, even though he's a long way away, I shouldn't say a long way away, 2 years away, he's still showing he can do it on the PGA Tour, and I was really happy for him.
Yeah, let's give a listen to what he had to say after his round.
I haven't been healthy in a lot of years. I haven't put myself in the heat with really a great, good opportunity to win a golf tournament in a while, and I missed it. I miss the, I miss the nerves. I miss the excitement, the cheers, and I think the emotion you saw in 18 was just I was proud of the way I played. I putted great all week. I mean, my putting stats were phenomenal this week. I putted beautifully today. I made everything that was makeable for the most part. So I don't feel any less pride for the way I played because I didn't win, and because it was Rory. I mean, probably doesn't take any sting out of it. I have a lot of respect for his game. I have a lot of respect for him as a person. But it still stings. I mean, you know, I'm a competitor and I want to win, and it pisses me off I didn't.
Very well said by Jim Furyk. But I got a kick out of his comments on his 71-year-old caddy who's been with Jim Furyk for 20 years. Here's what Furyk had to say about the one, the only Fluff.
He's pretty amazing. Fluff, you know what? How about we just call him 71-year-old Mike Cowan? he's pretty amazing. He doesn't change much out there. I probably don't look like I change, but I can tell inside what I'm feeling. I can feel my heartbeat. I know when I'm jacked up and excited. Fluff just, you know, he's a guy that loves, I've always said this, he loves what he does for a living. He loves coming to work. Everyone likes Mike. And he never changes. Whether I'm shooting 80 or I'm shooting 65, he is the same person on the bag, and you can't ask for any more than that.
Pretty amazing stuff, Jay, when you hear a player talk about a caddy that he's had for 20 years.
Well, and if you take it a step further and you talk a little bit about Fluff, I mean, you think about it was Jacobson and then Tiger and then Furyk. I mean, that's a pretty good run for good old Fluff. You know, he's, if there's a Hall of Fame for caddies, he's probably in the first class.
I'd have to agree with that. What Tiger and Jack were to playing, I submit to you that Fluff is to caddy in. Now, let's talk a little bit about Tiger Woods. We know he made that quadruple seven on the par three 17th. Subtract that, it probably comes out, you know, obviously a lot better in the final tally. He did finish tied for 30th, and here's his comments following the fourth and final round.
I felt like I was playing well. You know, my score didn't really indicate that going into the final day, but I was hitting the golf ball well. And, you know, I'm frustrated of lipping more putts out than I think I have in a very long time. Just one of those weeks where just nothing really got rolling enough to get me going. So all in all, it was a solid week.
Tiger always has that great mirror to look into, and I think that's one of the reasons that he's been so great for so long. He finds it very difficult to find any fault with his play, and I think that's a good way to play the game.
Well, it helps your confidence. There's no question about it. I do think, you know, you see signs of good things, but you also see, you know, some negatives. But it's very clear that, you know, he's setting up, his whole agenda is for four dates, for the four major championships. And he is adding the match play in Austin. And you know, he said he needs more reps. Well, we know he'll get 3 days of playing at least. So, you know, he's certainly going to be one of the guys you figure maybe to be in the mix at the Masters based on how he plays, unless he makes a couple of mistakes like he did at Sawgrass.
Just a word about that match play. It's always an exciting week for me. I happen to be great friends with the head professional at the Austin Country Club, Dale Morgan, as fine a dresser as there is in the professional ranks. He's a fashion plate by himself. Get to stay with the longtime club pro, Sonny Rhodes, who actually was a dear friend of Harvey Pienick, served as a pallbearer along with Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite. So, and now to have Tiger coming to Austin for the first time, it is going to be incredible. Speaking of incredible, your man Rambo, Jay. Jesus, right, Jay. Tournament hanging in the balance. Rom with a one-shot lead, playing the par 5, 11th hole. Hits a poor drive, gets in the left fairway bunker. Has some crazy notion that he can go for the green. His caddy tells him, no, let's chip it out to the right, play safe. Tells him a second time. Rom says, I'm not comfortable with that shot. Goes ahead, much to the caddy's dismay, puts it in the water. A telltale sign that John Rom, you know, is going to have to learn to rein it back just a little bit.
No question about it. He said some stuff in Spanish that I hadn't heard in a long time as part of the broadcast. It was a horrific idea. I mean, just and anybody watching that has a sense of play in the game knew it was a bad idea. I mean, a superhero couldn't hit that shot. I don't even think Tiger, like back in 99, would have thought about that shot. It just was a bad play. The caddy should have tackled him and said, hey, let's not lose the golf tournament here. But, you know, you can't do that as a caddy. In the end, when the guy says, yeah, I'm going to go for it, you got to be like, yeah, all right, now we got it. You got it. You got this shot. You know, it's a, you know, as you and I know, you know, every caddy is waiting to get fired. I mean, that's just the situation. And it wasn't a fun afternoon the rest of the way for Mr. Rahm or that caddy. I mean, he did fight back with a birdie, but that play really determined John's fate, and hopefully it'll be a learning experience for him.
You know, you were quite a stick in your day. What was your philosophy if a caddy tried to call you off a shot and you felt confident hitting the shot? Would you go in with your feelings or would you succumb to what the caddy's trying to tell you?
I think it's a tough dilemma, Bob. You've got to take, especially if you respect the guy. I always liked somebody that was a good player or had been a good player or knew the game, and it's different strokes for different folks. Some guys just want a guy to carry the clubs and just pull them out of the bag and that's it and say, see you tomorrow. It's a tough deal. I mean, but in the end, Bob, the player's got to make the decision. He's the one pulling the trigger, and Rahm made the bad decision.
Yeah, but he displays so much talent. I can see nothing but a bright future with him. The power that he possesses, and his putting's coming around. I mean, he's only 24 years old. We got to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Sure,
I think he'll learn from that experience. How about Eddie Pepperell from England? You never heard that name, probably. what a fun week he had there. First time playing in the Players, comes up with a tie for third, makes that unbelievable putt on the 17th hole. Great week for Eddie Pepperell.
I mean, a huge week. His name is now part of the world scene. You finished tied for third. You're from the UK, from England. I mean, now you're going to be talked about, and we'll have to see where we go. Do we see Eddie Pepperell follow up this finish with some good play, especially because he's going to get opportunity in majors? You talk about horses for courses. This Johnny Vegas loves TPC Sawgrass. He loves Florida golf courses. Makes the longest putt ever since they've been recording putts during the Players' Championship on 17, 69 feet, 7 inches. Oh, and let me just tell you this real quick. Dustin Johnson tied for fifth. Jason Day tied for eighth. Justin Rose tied for eighth. I mean, again, the best players in the world playing good golf. Maybe not winning. You look at DJ, Bob, and if he'd have made a couple of putts on Saturday and Sunday, maybe he's in the mix. I mean, that's the beauty of what we got cooking right now. And then quietly, as of late, Hideki Matsuyama, who we were talking about so much, 16 months ago with so much promise, he ties for fifth.
Yeah, another guy that really surprised me. I said to Janice, our executive producer of In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, that if you walked up on the first tee and somebody was looking for a game and his name was Brian Harman, and you saw that he was a little left-hander, you might be wanting to throw a couple of shots his way to get some action, and I guarantee you, you're going out of there with empty pockets. I mean, Harman can really play.
Oh no, he's a streaky type player too. When he gets going with the putter, and he's an aggressive player. He makes a lot of birdies. He may not hit it that long, but again, somewhat to what I mentioned earlier with Furyk, he's got a knack for finding that hole. We've all played with guys who may not be the best ball strikers or the longest guys off the tee, but they find a way to get it in the hole at a pretty good number. Once again, Bob, my watch continues. Jordan Spieth, he misses the cut. Again, during the rounds, there are signs of things where he makes a lot of birdies, but he makes double bogeys and mistakes. And, I don't know how. I mean, he's not even in the discussion going into the Masters. Now, maybe he'll find some way to ride the ship before it, but, he's off the map right now.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing because only a couple of years back, he wins the Masters, wins the United States Open, had really good chance to pick up that claret jug that year, did it the following year. It seemed like Jordan Spieth could do no wrong, and now just watching him on the putting green prior to his rounds, he'd had like 10 attempts, I saw, to make a 6-foot putt. It pains me to see somebody that you know, was riding so high in this sport, almost making it look easy. But, you know, the game of golf is not easy. And anybody that plays it that thinks it's easy, all they have to do is wait a little while. They'll find out that they were wrong. This is a very, very tough sport because it combines not only physical attributes, but it combines mental attributes. Now, we all know Jordan Spieth certainly hasn't changed physically over the last couple of years. Yep. What has changed is how he thinks about playing golf, how he thinks about putts that, you know, he's standing over. He used to automatically assume he was going to make it. Now there's a lot of doubt in his mind.
There is no question about that, and we'll see where it goes. From here, Phil Mickelson missed the cut, but you know what? He wasn't even going. There was a lot of talk. He might not even play. He just cannot stand that golf course, while other people just seem to tear it up. He can't. And Bob, one of the guys that you were kind of tracking going in because of his length, Cameron Champ, unfortunately had to withdraw with a back injury.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to hear. I mean, he's so young, but he swings at it so violently. I hope that's, you know, certainly not going to be a problem. Let's take a short time out so you can hear all about the Normandy Golf Club. When we return, we'll take a preview look at the Valspar Championship, the last event in the Florida Swing.
You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at the Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Glad you're with us as we've looked at the Players' Championship. What a week it was. We're going to take a look at the Valspar Championship in just a moment. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek, and you can follow Bob Bubka at Bob Bubka VOG. And I always like telling people, don't forget that VOG stands for Voice of Golf. He's out there on Twitter. He tweeted that his prediction on Talk Sport was Rory McIlroy, and he was right. We'll see who he likes this week. It's the Valspar Championship, Bob, Innisbrook Resort, which may be the toughest golf course in the Florida Swing.
Boy, you hit the nail right on the head there, Jay. It easily could be the toughest golf course in all of Florida, the Copperhead course. You know, it's got the famous Snake Pit, 16, 17, and 18. And they got a pretty good field. You know, there was some chatter that it wasn't going to be that great. But, boy, when you get 87 of the 144 players in the field at the Players' Championship playing at Valspar, you're doing you're doing right. And, of course, Dustin Johnson going to be the first time he plays in it. This is a great golf course, Copperhead, for Dustin Johnson.
You know, Bob, we had kind of a similar situation where people were chirping heading into Honda. And then we got that incredible finish with JT in the mix. And then all of a sudden, Keith Mitchell winning his first event. And now we've got it on the tail end of Florida. But when you look at the field, I mean, give me a break. What are you talking about, weak? There aren't many weak fields on tour anymore. Dustin Johnson is playing. He's the world number one this week. Sergio, Patrick Reed, Jay Day, Webb Simpson. Furyk, who's hot. I mean, why couldn't he just roll down, especially on a tough golf course with the way he putts? Casey, Paul Casey, Adam Hadwin, Ryan Moore, who made a hole-in-one last week. Rahm is there trying to recover from Sunday. Charles Schwartzel, Louis Oosthuizen, who we don't talk that much about. Hey, there's nothing wrong. Valspar shouldn't be embarrassed by this field at all.
Yeah, and Paul Casey, as you mentioned, the defending champion, certainly no big stretch to think that Paul cannot come up with the goods to defend his title. It's a great golf course for him. It's a ball striker's golf course. You have to be strategic with your play, and that pretty much describes how Paul Casey plays this game. Lucas Glover, who virtually vanished from the scene, has been playing well of late, and when he gets that putter going, he can be a definite factor. And I'm going to have my eyes on Jon Rahm. It's going to be a big test for that 24-year-old to see how resilient he really is. What game, what confidence is he going to bring to that first tee come Thursday? That's a big question mark for Jon Rahm.
Well, and I think it's at an important time in the schedule. And we're starting to see that as this new schedule is playing out in its first year. Granted, you don't have some guys here that are getting ready to go to Austin and be involved in the match play. You have some guys playing that are then going to play in the match play, and then it'll be Augusta. So it's a unique time. And Rahm, is one of those guys that you get the feeling because he's so accustomed to that fiery type of play, while it may affect him in a round, I don't know that it'll affect him the next week. So I think that's an interesting point, Bob, to make, is to follow Rahm, not saying that he needs to win, but just get some good play, good reps, as Tiger likes to say, reps, whatever that is.
let me ask you this, Jay, about Jon Rahm. A lot of people make the comparison to a young Jack Nicklaus with those powerful thighs. I mean, Jon Rahm exudes power. Doesn't take really much of a golf swing, but that ball seems to stay in the air forever. Does Jon Rahm in any way remind you of a young Jack Nicklaus?
Well, Jack, when he first came on tour, first played, as an amateur in a lot of events, was a little heavier than he was in his best days. But a lot of that, as you said, were those legs. And he had a strong core, even though he might have a little bit of a gut early on. And Rahm and these guys now, most of them are so fine-tuned, and that's the thing that amazes us. When you see a guy like Rahm, and he looks like he's going at it smooth, but yet it takes off like a rocket ship. I mean, that's the difference in the game today. I mean, they're playing a game that you and I, in a sense, are unfamiliar with from our days of being able to play proficient, because it's so different. There was somebody, Bob, that came out to Normandy yesterday that was playing with golf clubs from 1905 to 1918. He had old hickory shafts. He had this incredible driver from 1923. And he's one of these, old school golf buffs. I don't get it, but, God bless him. But I asked him, I said, what does it feel like when you hit a bad shot? And he goes, You know it immediately. You feel it in your hands. These golf clubs are not the same. And I'm not trying to make a case for guys being better back in the day. I don't buy into all that stuff. It's just a different game today. There's no question about it.
I better go check my trunk of my car. That sounds like my set of golf clubs. You were talking about there, my man. But Valspar.
His friend, Bob, his friend with him, his friend, they're both, I guess, in some kind of society of these old school golf clubs. And his friend had knickers on.
Well, There's nothing I can say to somebody wearing knickers using golf clubs that look like mine. You said it all, Mr. Randolph.
All right, well, Bob and I are done rapping, but that doesn't mean that the talking ends, because The Mouth That Roars is coming your way next. Our man Alex Maselli is going to give Bob his take on the Florida swing and what impact the Players has on other tournaments. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome, Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read. And Alex, what I want to talk about today is in the aftermath of the Players' Championship. I distinctly remember all the conversations leading up to the move from May to March, and would it work, and, you know, the ramifications involved. But I think one of the casualties as we exit the Players' Championship are the other events that are scheduled in Florida. And I want your take on that. It seems like, you know, there's been a tremendous sacrifice made by the other Florida events to enhance the Players' Championship.
Well, let me see if I can't correct you to some extent. I feel like I'm doing this always when I do this show. First of all, the reason for the move was not solely to move the Players' Championship to March from May. The reason for the move was to shorten the PGA Tour season, make sure that the FedEx Cup playoffs were worthwhile, valuable, and not up against football. So that was the reason for the move. The only way that reasonably it could happen is you had to move the Players out of May and move to March so that you could move the PGA Championship out of August, where you're going to have FedEx Cup playoff events, and move that to May. So that was the whole impetus behind everything. Now, in any kind of dramatic move like that, you're going to have collateral damage. And specifically, this time round, Honda is the one that suffered the most out of these changes. They in the past had been in a much better position than they were this time round. Their field was poor. I don't know if they're if their gate was worse or not. I don't really even know what their TV ratings were, to be quite honest with you. But it seemed like the field, there's no question the field was worse. It seemed like it didn't have the same buzz it had in the past. That being said, Arnold Palmer had the best field it's had in years. It was one of the best tournaments it's been in years. The interest level was much higher for Arnold Palmer than it has been in the past. So I don't think Arnold Palmer would agree with you and say that it was one of the casualties of this change. And Valspar's field is relatively good as well. So I don't think that everybody suffered in this scenario. I actually think the only one that did suffer was Honda, and that is something that may be able to get addressed depending on how they look at the schedule in 2020. So I think it's a little premature to make a judgment call on the move just after the first year.
What are the possibilities to improve the predicament that Honda's in? I mean, if nothing changes, why wouldn't the same results occur?
Well, I think, first of all, the World Golf Championship, Mexico, where it is a problem for Honda. because everybody's going to play in that event, which means their likelihood is going to be skipping Honda. So that's one of the problems, especially when you go Los Angeles, which has become a much bigger event now, and they've even elevated it even more now, making it a invitational, and the fact that you get a 3-year exemption for winning the Genesis Open in Los Angeles. Go right from there, which many players will want to play. You go from there to the World Golf Championship Mexico. You're going to want to take the next week off. So what if Mexico isn't in that slot? What if Mexico is somewhere else? What if Mexico, as an example, takes after Sony? We don't really know what's going to be happening in the desert, the Bapo Desert Classic, as we call it. I don't call it anything other than that. It could go away, or it could get moved. At the same time, you know, we're not sure what's going to happen with the timing between the Players' Championship, Valspar, and then the Masters. What if there's a week in there that you can fit the World Golf Championship Mexico instead? So, you know, there's a lot of different things going on with the schedule, which we don't know and we're not privy to. So that's a those are all possibilities. I think the second part of that is that, you know, it is incumbent upon every tournament to do what they need to do to make it an interesting venue for the players to come. So maybe Honda now has to step up their game a little. What that is, I don't really know, but maybe there are some things they can do that gets their players, those players interested in showing up. Because let's be honest, an extra one or two in the top 15 makes a big difference. How do you get those guys? What do you have to do? Maybe they need to think about that.
It's always a pleasure to have him on the air. He is the founder and publisher of Morning Read. It's your source for what's happening in the world of golf on a daily basis. Thank you, Mr. Maselli.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.